Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my returning guest is August Goforth. He is author of the newly released book, The Risen, A Companion to Grief. Information, and in the ways it was presented in this book, evolves from a multitude of vibrantly complex yet deceptively subtle systems of interwoven risen and earthly cosmologies, psychologies, philosophies, sciences, mysticisms, witticisms, ancient and modern arts of drama and healing. Interpenetrating this book is an adjustable framework designed to support, adapt, and guide. Embracing it is an orchestrated risen performance of grace, offering to bring uplifting meaning to the temporary but often terribly empty and lonely darkness of our grief. For more information, you can visit August's website, which is therisenbooks.com, and I have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome August to the show. Good day, August.
Good day, Robert. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, and it's hard to believe that it was just over 4 years ago that we spoke last. It seems like just yesterday, but then sometimes it seems like an eternity. But we had a good time talking about your book, Dialogues of Love, Grief, and Survival Beyond Death.
Right, the first book. Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. So I think probably we should start with some of the basics. So for listeners who have not heard your earlier appearances, would you mind explaining to the listeners who the Risen are?
The Risen is a term that I use amongst many other terms that people may have that resonates for me mostly to describe those people who have transitioned through what we call death and have risen in some way physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually in a different dimension, on a different plane, on the other side, the afterlife, however you want to call it. It seems to me that the phrase, the risen, is a very positive word and phrase in itself that moves beyond fear and worry about our loved ones, and also into the understanding that they're not afraid and they're not worried about us either. So I hope that explains that.
It does. It does. And you're right. The phrase does elicit a positive perspective, and so it that's great, and it kind of just sets the stage for a discussion in that realm. So now the book, this book title also has that it's a companion to grief. So in which way is it a companion?
Well, anyone who has been through any kind of grief, and if we haven't, we will, understands the unforeseeable depths of pain and loneliness and isolation that can just come without warning. And there are lots and lots of books about grief. I'm actually a psychotherapist by career here in New York City, and so I have a lot of firsthand frontline exposure to people's deepest aspects of grief, and that includes my own. And a lot of people approach it as a problem, like what's wrong with me, or this shouldn't be, or this isn't natural, or I don't want this. And a great deal of resistance to grief arises from that. And the resistance is also increasing and even causing the pain and suffering. So the book is to help people understand that grief is not a problem to be fixed or a condition to be cured, but actually an opportunity to evolve and to grow, because grief is an energy in itself. And through the difficulty, through the darkness, again, we could use the term, we rise out of that. We rise from the darkness into the light. And what I've also learned through my many years of work as a therapist is that people aren't really looking eventually so much to be cured of their grief or have the problem fixed or have it go away, but they want some kind of comfort. And the best comfort that I know of is just to have some sense of presence of other people who get it, whether a single person, a friend, or a group of people who don't shun you or are afraid of your grief or isolate you in some kind of way, but are willing to be there for you on your journey in some kind of a way, either because they've gone through something like it before or they just love you that much. This book is like that. So it's not to trying to fix grief or figure it out or cure it, but to look at grief as an adventure. And so it acts as kind of a companion. The book was written for me too, so there's a lot of me in the book as well, and it's a companion for me as well.
Yeah. So, and, you know, one of the things that you talk about, you know, as far as the energy of grief, you know, in the book you mentioned that it's only temporary and can be transmuted into something higher and finer. So can you talk a little bit about, because it seems that one of the benefits of this book is to guide people or to offer an opportunity for people to experience that transmutation of grief.
Right. So it's not just about getting rid of the grief. And a lot of that is really the psychological need for resistance against change. And we just want things to go back to the way they were. And that's perfectly okay. That makes sense. But the energy of grief is something that, as far as I know, I don't see how people can prepare for it, because it just comes when it comes, and it has its own ways. And that's something that I repeat throughout the book, is that grief has its own ways. And what's interesting about grief as an energy is that I use the comparison of nature, where nature has an orderly progression with change. Nature changes all the time. So say the seasons, it's going from summer to fall to winter to spring and back around again. And there's growth that goes on, but this happens automatically. With grief, nature doesn't really involve itself with our grief. The grief itself requires an energy that's above nature, or you could call it supernatural. And you can see that when people are suddenly moved in such ways that they prayed for the very first time, or they've looked to something religious or spiritual for the very first time. It's almost like we have this spiritual intuition to move into a different direction that will raise our vibration. Again, sort of going the other direction, that grief is more like it could either take us down into a very, very deep place, a very deep whirlpool, and suck us down in, or we can find ways to not get sucked down into it, but to at first to relax and to float and to rest on it and surrender to it. And from there, because grief is very exhausting after we've rested and we need a lot of rest, we can start rising again. And there are different spiritual ways of utilizing this energy of grief, much the way that a surfer would utilize the surf of the ocean rather than letting it get suck her down into under the water. She would actually ride on top of the water and ride with the waves. So the book is, that's the kind of the common thread about finding this extra supernatural energy that will help us lift us above the grief and rise through it. And as we rise through it, it changes in the way that nature changes and growth occurs in that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, in the very beginning of your book, you have a disclaimer that the risen, a companion to grief, endorses neither suicide nor euthanasia. So why did you feel it was important to include that disclaimer?
Because I've had conversations with people who really for the first time are starting to lift their sights into life beyond this life, and maybe are for the first time open to exploring the idea that life does not end with death but continues on. And people have more than once posed the question to me, well, you know, if it's so great on the other side, then why don't we, you know, just kill ourselves here now and get it over with and go over there? And my response is, you could do that, and there's no judgment about that, but it's not necessary. That's really imposing unnecessary suffering upon yourself and perhaps other people around you. So I'm not saying that what I call self-exiting instead of suicide. Self-exiting is sometimes the better option of just moving our energy from one plane to another. And it's totally up to us to do that, regardless of what we've been taught to be afraid of it. There's nothing afraid. And if we do end up somehow becoming involved, either informally or formally, we're not taking our lives, we're just moving, transitioning our lives, relocating it to another place, that's fine. But there are appropriate, what I consider appropriate organizations and philosophies around how to have a good death, if that's what's needed. And so that's not the purpose of this book, is how to have a good death. There are, this is more about how to have a good life while grief is happening.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I can, I've, you know, heard, you know, argument of if it's so great, why stay here? And there are a lot of movies and plots to stories about that. You know, the idea of having, you know, a group of people, you know, basically exit this life with just the full intent of having another. But again, you know, it's, what's the rush?
Right.
Get there anyway.
And also it's something that, whether we want to admit it or not, everyone has thoughts about suicide or self-exiting. And some people go very deep into it and explore, and that's perfectly normal. So there is a chapter in both books that focuses exclusively on this idea of self-exiting. And at the time when I was in very deep grief and felt that I would rather leave than stay for various personal reasons, I couldn't decide. It was very confusing. Like, should I or shouldn't I? Does it matter? Does it not matter? And that's when some higher spiritual presences that came through in my own personal mediumship. My great-grandfather actually came through, and he was used as a channel from higher existing people. I use the word higher loosely, but who know more. And they transmitted to me some very beautiful thoughts and ideas and guidance about self-exiting and to think about it in different ways. And so that's also part of the book being a companion as well, that it's sort of it's like when you have a companion on a journey, you sit around a lot and you talk about things and you ponder things. And that's like at the end of each chapter actually is a list of ponderings that pull some of the more salient or more powerful ideas about from spirit out of the text and then presents it again to people at the end.
Yeah, that was actually one of my favorite parts of the book is the ponderings. I like to ponder, mm-hmm. and the one thing in the book is you really don't you basically present information and you leave it up to the reader to ponder, to come to their own awareness or acknowledgement of of their beliefs or even their awareness, whether it's something new or whether they're it's something that kind of had been hidden. So I mean, in a way, it, mm-hmm. you just allow free form really for the reader to be able to get from the book the ideas, the information, what they want.
Right. So the a good way to describe that process is one of exploration and experimentation, which to me are just words for play. They're other words for to actually have to play with these ideas, not to get so serious as well. So yeah, that's quite true. It does that.
Yeah. One of the in some of my questions that follow come from those ponderings, so the readers can kind of get an idea of the things that you bring to the forefront for people to consider. One of the areas was regarding bereavement. Now, that can be a real difficult period for some people. In the book, though, you explain that basically any from the perspective that any bereavement is a beginning, and so it's always a starting over. So would you mind sharing that, for people who are right now in that period? I think the idea of a starting over or beginning would be welcomed.
It's a very gentle but powerful way of modeling the idea that if we change our perspective, what we're experiencing changes as well. And if we reframe something or we speak in different language about the same thing, it shifts. There's this living quality to it. And it's that living quality that is so important, that's emphasized throughout the book, that this is a book about life, not about death. This is a book about beginnings, not about endings. If you're thinking about, it's all over, it'll never be happen again, you're sort of directing your mind in the direction of lack and limitation, and which will result in feelings and emotional chemistry that supports that, and that also then will motivate your behavior in terms of how you are or not going to move through life. If you start reframing it in a different way, such as saying, well, let's just look at the other side, maybe this is a beginning, not an ending. And scientists know this very much so, especially biologists, that they see how life is in a constant growth and building up, and then it kind of relaxes and disintegrates back into the elements, and it comes back, and then out of that, out of the compost heap, comes new life, and it's ever evolving, that the new life might be dramatically or very subtly different. And the same thing with us, that when we allow ourselves to view our grief or our bereavement from as an open door rather than a closed door. And there are wonderful phrases you come around and see that people say when one door closes, another door opens and so on. So it's just kind of a suggestive modeling for people on how to redirect their thinking so that they'll feel better.
Yeah, you know, and it seems that, that period of bereavement, you know, is obviously very, unique to each individual. But also when it comes to, you know, the grief, like the loss of a child or a loved one who's grief or that loss is, there, maybe even to the time that you become one of the risen join them in spirit. Is there a way to maybe shift perspective? You know, if someone, because I personally know someone who has really just been in such a, you know, that bereaved state, and she has been for probably 15, 16 years now since the loss of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, from my perspective, it really keeps her from really enjoying while she's here. You know what I mean? How can, for someone who's in kind of that particular state, I mean, is there anything that, any maybe change of perspective that might help them enjoy, you know, life now better, before?
Right. Well, when someone has a loss like that, make no mistake, it's a real loss, and it's devastating, and it's powerful, and it's hard to feel like one has any reason left to live. And all these things are kind of true in that moment, but they're not meant to be forever. There's a, just like the seasons are changing, there's kind of a seasonal aspect to the emotional energy of a human being in terms of growth and gain and loss. And what happens for all kinds of reasons, basically the way that we were taught to use our minds, or not taught to really how to use our minds correctly and our emotions correctly, is that we get caught up in this whirlpool of grief and we become very self-absorbed and almost narcissistic in a way. That's a kind of survival, but it's not a very fun survival, and all the life has gone out of a person's life. And of course, because that child, for example, or that animal companion was the light and life of you. The missing link is that the realization or understanding or experience that child is still alive. And that can be a huge leap for some people, and so you can't really make that leap. It's sort of a gradual thing, and oftentimes also because that original trauma of losing the child is a very real trauma, and there you can see in all the older cultures where there are all kinds of really good healing rituals to help people get through that trauma and to take their time and not to rush it. And for most modern people, we're told, like, you know, just you have 2 weeks, maybe 10 days off from work, and then you got to get back and you got to get over it. And that's just horrendous.
Yeah.
So with someone like this person, if they can understand that their child is very aware of them as well, and their child is also very well aware of their suffering and grief, and it hurts. From what I've heard from people on the other side who talk with me, is that they have their own form of grief or heartbreak, which is directly connected to the fact that they can see we're in such pain, in such sorrow, and they love us so much, and they really want us to somehow find a way to stop indulging and overindulging in suffering that's unnecessary mm-hmm. suffering at some point, and change the perspective so that, and you know, we're going to the gravesite every day. We're basically turning our backs on our loved ones because they're watching us do that, and they want us to get away from the grave and turn around and look at them as they are now and connect with them as they are now. And they want us to be happy for them, not sad for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and kind of in connection with that, one of the things that you talk about in the book is that the idea of trying to undo a loved one's leaving, of course, but that such a thing might interfere with their experience as well as ours. So is that kind of, you know, by someone who's maybe overindulging in a sense in the grief, that it's, how does it, mm-hmm. I can understand how it interferes with a person here in the physical, you know, as far as the sense of well-being, but how does that might interfere with their experience?
Because we have this emotional connection with them, and it's a very real connection. And so just in the same way that we can feel someone's love for us, or they can feel our love for us, that doesn't stop. There's no barrier to that, regardless of where the person is, whether they're in Paris or, you know, in heaven. That emotional bond is still very, very strong. But things, and the book talks about that there are certain energies that some people call negative energies, like fear, anxiety, worry, doubt, that pinch off those emotional connections. And that pinching off actually hurts us, and it doesn't feel good to them either. So if a person, usually when people, their grief brings them to such a low place that they can't get any lower, and then they start surrendering and relaxing and releasing, and then they start eating again, and then they start opening the curtains. If that's not happening, then the best thing for a person to do is to reach out to a grief counselor or a therapist or their rabbi or their priest or someone that they trust and feel safe with to help them get some strength back to start looking in a better direction.
Yeah.
And the whole time, you know, our loved ones are watching us. I mean, they're right there with us. But in our grief actually makes us blind and deaf to a lot of the more subtle sensations that people who've transitioned are trying to use to communicate with us.
Yeah. Well, we're about halfway through the show, August, so I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask August a question, you can dial in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, feel free to type in any question that you may have. And then when we come back from break, August, you just briefly mentioned negatives, you know, that those so-called negatives. One of the things you talk about in the book is that emotional, mental, any of these negativities are really a positive waiting to unfold. So I kind of like to explore a little bit about that when we come back, okay?
Sure.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And I do want to just give a quick update that our show is now available through the TuneIn app, which is available for iPhone, BlackBerry, and Android phones, and also for connecting devices like Amazon Echo and Google Home. So definitely check it out. It makes it easy for you to listen. Again, today's very special guest is August Goforth. We're talking about his new book, The Risen, A Companion to Grief. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is therisenbooks.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. And do check it out. He's got previous interviews. He's also got a blog and more information about his book. So definitely go and visit and support him there. So, okay, with that, we're back, August.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So negativities are really a positive waiting to unfold. So I would really love for you to share that, because I think everyone out there is experiencing or is going to experience real soon some kind of negativity.
Right. Again, it is another way of looking at energy and how we label that energy and how we're directing our minds to think about it. And our brains, we know from medical science, control a great deal of the chemistry of our emotional feeling, which is caused by our kind of thinking. So the book really explores very carefully the use of language and offers other ways of utilizing language that change the quality and vibration of an emotional experience, including grief. And for the sake of conversation, you could think of an emotion on a scale of low to high, or we could say negative to positive. People might notice in the book that the word bad is not used hardly at all. We speak in terms of good and less than good, because the universe is only good. There is no bad to the universe. There's simply different forms of energy that feel better than the others. And so the less than good feelings we could call negative. And when a person is knocked out of alignment from the natural inherited well-being that we all are born into this life with, whether it's a physical illness or an emotional trauma or the loss of a loved one through grief, our energy goes and lowers into those places. And very often what is needed is there's always this universal return to balance, and not only balance, but better than balance. And when we are in the throes, we're under the influence of the chemistry of a negative, we'll call a negative feeling, fear, for example, or worry or anxiety, we can either amplify it and make it worse, depending on how we think about it, or we can see it as an opportunity. All right, well, this is just my internal GPS system that's trying to get me aligned back on the road to feeling better, which is my natural inheritance. So it's okay for me to feel sad. It's okay for me to feel angry. It's okay for me to feel afraid. However, these are temporary states of being that are not, they're not meant to hang out in for forever. That there are ways of raising our vibration back to a sense of well-being again. And people do that in all kinds of ways. Of course, they may take medications, or they may drink alcohol, or there's all different kinds of ways of changing this. So I don't know if that answers your question. It seems like sort of a normal, natural thing to me, but that's because of my lifelong contact with the risen. That,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. It does answer. You know, and I think with the practice, so to speak, of you know, getting back to that balance, and you know, and shifting. It, you know, once you get better, you know, at making that shift, that then it would become more second nature, you know, to, or easier at least, to not dwell in the negatives or kind of end up on that downward spiral.
Right, and that becomes a very important turning point for people when they become aware of that they have the freedom of choice. So once you come to this understanding, you also kind of have to hold yourself accountable for your emotional experience as you move through life. You just don't make it worse. You always want to make it better in some kind of a way.
Now, one theme that kind of goes throughout the book is the idea that there is never any judgment, that there is always opportunities for adjustment. Judgment and adjustment, you know, I wouldn't have put those two together. So can you explain that?
Well, as human beings, we teach each other. There's a component in our mental faculties that I refer to as the ego mind, and the book actually goes into great in-depth discussion about the ego mind, that the ego mind actually judges us a lot, or the ego mind has been taught to judge us in some kind of way. But we're just very hard on ourselves, and we're very hard on other people. And one of the things that people worry about is that they're not perfect. And that when they transition, or when their loved one has transitioned, that somehow this life of imperfection or unsuccess is somehow going to haunt them, and they're going to be judged for it and punished for it in some kind of a way. And it's very silly, because the universe has no interest in punishing itself, of which we're a part. It only wants to uplift. And it's very patient in waiting for us to kind of come around to that way of thinking. So when whether we're on this side or on the other side, however you want to put it, we're expecting to be judged by this committee that sits on the other side in some kind of a way. They're not going to do that. It's again, sort of comes back to that biblical thing, like, you know, who's without sin cast the first stone kind of a thing. It's just like we all make mistakes. Rather, we're led very gently to the understanding that this is just an opportunity for, you can either continue to do this thing that causes you suffering, or you can not do it, and you can adjust. And adjust is also the word relocation, that it's just an opportunity for adjustment. I don't know if I could say it any sooner. It's just a different way of saying that it's a positive thing in that way. It's moving towards growth, towards evolution, towards expansion. Obviously, the universe is based upon expansion, and it's expanding whether we want it to or not. We're part of it, so we have to expand with it. Judgment will shut us down. Judgment will shut us down, and adjustment will open us up.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, you know, and when you explain it, you know, in the way that, you know, you can continue this way or you can adjust, you know, that's, one of the things I kind of have always taken issue with is the idea of, you know, we're here to learn lessons, you know, I mean, it's kind of like a pass or fail, you know, learn your lesson, and, but, you know, the idea of, in my perspective, I just kind of changed that to that it's really you know, just an awareness creating situation, experience, you know, and then
experience,
that,
yeah,
and that, you know, you can do it differently, you know, to get better results, you know. I mean, and the choice is yours. I mean, you know, and so I think when people look at, you know, the when they look at judgment and try to remove judgment from their state of consciousness, you know, that it seems that, you know, I mean, it seems like we're more free to be able to, you know, to do something and maybe meet resistance, maybe have a, you know, kind of a challenging response, but it also mm-hmm. kind of frees us to be able to experience life no matter what. And ultimately, hopefully, you know, we'll make the appropriate adjustments to make things flow smoother and happier.
Yeah. What's interesting is that people may easily actually be afraid of freedom. It scares them, either because they were taught to be afraid of it, or they don't understand it, or they don't believe that there is any such thing. But it kind of rattles them to have this idea, like, I'm totally free to do whatever I want, have whatever experience I want, without judgment. One of the things I think was pointed out in the first book is that if anyone is a judge, it's ourselves. Like, we're the hardest judges on ourselves. We're very, very hard on ourselves. And it's not necessary. And when we realize it's not necessary and we take the pressure off ourselves, growth begins to happen. Suddenly circulation begins to move. Life begins to go in the right direction it wants to go.
Yeah, I agree. Now, for people who are listening who might want to make a conscious contact with a risen loved one, what advice would you give them?
Conscious contact in what
with,
way
with a risen,
do you mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just to make that connection, you know, to make that conscious connection, you know, to be able to, you know, create that. I mean, like, what would be hindrances to someone connecting with that loved one?
Well, very often it's removing the things that are getting in the way of that happening. That if you look at all the older ancient societies, they understood that continued conscious connection with people, despite the fact that they relocated to a place where you can't see them, was still a natural benefit of love. And so it's really at first for us in this modern 21st century to find out what it is that's keeping it from happening, to remove the resistances. And often it's lack of information, ignorance, it's fear, it's anxiety, it's worry. I have been studying and teaching and doing workshops in Italy with people who are interested in mediumship and spiritualism. And time again, I'm really impressed with just how deeply embedded in some of the religious culture there is that you shouldn't try to communicate that it's a bad thing or bad things mm-hmm. could happen or God won't like it. So there may be a lot of aspects to our belief systems that are keeping us mm-hmm. from achieving any kind of contact. So it's first trying to find the things that are blocking the way and then softening them or removing them or changing them in some kind of a way. Probably the easiest thing to aim for is an emotional contact. When you're just sitting there and suddenly you can feel the other person, and because you really are, and they're feeling you as well too, or suddenly you're thinking about them because they're thinking about you. In that moment, resistance was low enough so that the communication could start flowing. Oftentimes, this communication doesn't happen until we fall asleep and we're not resisting during our sleep, and so they can come into the mentality of our dream life and have communication with us there. So maybe even experimenting with dreams might be helpful to some people as a way to approach the beginning of that communication.
Okay. Yeah, that emotional connection. I mean, that seems to kind of take away from all of the, you know, the earthly drama, you know, or mm-hmm. you know, the minutia of Earth, but you know, to connect to that emotion, which really the emotions really seem to transcend that time and space.
Yeah, and just the way that a piece of music can move us, because of its vibration, it's the same thing with emotions. They can move us into very different states of dimension and perception and communication as well.
Yeah, exactly. Now, when it comes to discernment of, you know, what your own mental voice, you know, between your own mental voice and that one that would be from a voice from spirit, what are some ideas for people to be able to recognize or to discern the difference between the two?
The majority of people have no idea how their thinking works or what thoughts are and what thoughts are not. Most people have no control over their thinking. It's the opposite. Thinking has control over them. And so there's a lot of noise and a lot of static and a lot of chatter that's going on all the time in most people's minds or their mental experience. So usually getting into quiet states, learning how to meditate in certain ways that reduce that mental chatter. Also the practice of the various practices of mindfulness, which is somewhat different than formal meditation, is a very good way of getting firsthand knowledge and experience about how your mind works and what the various voices in there are and who they belong to. It's a lot of work that I do in my therapy work is helping people realize that the rule of thumb is that if I ever hear or sense a voice, we'll call it a voice, in my head, that is saying things in order to make me feel less than good, like shaming me or guilting me or making me feel afraid, that the rule of thumb is that is not my voice, that I was not born with that voice in me. And I would never do that to myself any more than I would speak like that to a child. So that's the first clue that we have somehow inherited or got these voices inside of us that have been there. You know, some of them have been transmitted from generations back 100 years, and others are just from our most recent experiences of school and family and parenting and things like that. So it's being able to recognize whose voice is ours and whose voice is not ours and what the quality of them is. The what we could call the communication aspects of a person in spirit are very subtle, and most of us can't hear them with our actual physical ears. It's more what's called clairaudience, hearing with our spiritual ears. So for every physical sense, hearing, taste, touch, sight, there's a spiritual sense as well too that are higher and finer. And so also any kind of practice we can do that will activate what for most people are latent spiritual sensations will actually bring us closer into the sensing apparatus of a risen person.
Okay, great. I like the idea of isolating those voices that are detrimental, you know, to our, you know, to our sense of self, as, and recognizing them as being, you know, plants from some other source, and
right, they're and like that, viruses of some kind.
Exactly. So now, I guess, kind of the last question I have is, what do you feel are a couple of the most important perspectives that you hope the readers are going to take away from reading The Risen, A Companion to Grief?
One I could think of right off the bat basically reduces down to a few words, which basically mean lighten up. Don't get so serious. Life is not serious. The universe is not serious. The universe is built on a good sense of humor. Have fun. Chill out. Have a good time. Play as much as you can. That's all the messages that's come out for me from this material. Mostly, it's kind of more formalized, like when the angels appear to the shepherds and they say, fear not. Like people in spirit are constantly telling us, fear not, stop worrying, it's okay. And they really want us, if we're going to have internalized mental talk with ourselves, is to talk to ourselves that way too, to remind ourselves that it's okay. The universe is a good, friendly place. I'm okay. The other person is okay. Everything is okay. Is probably, maybe those are the two words that the whole book is mm-hmm. trying to get across, is like, it's okay. And until we can come to a place where we can actually not only believe that, but feel it, there are all kinds of ways to come to that point, but that's really where that's the new beginning that's constantly arising, you know, because the world is complicated, unbelievably complicated, and we're constantly getting pushed this way and pulled that way. And there are moments when it's not okay. And sometimes we have to figure out ways of how do I get back into alignment? How do I say this is okay? And when the person comes finally face to face with that sense of freedom that you mentioned, they realize that, oh, I have the choice to make it okay. I have the choice to say this okay. Maybe everyone around me and my family is saying, no, it's not okay. I'm just saying, but you're not the boss of me. I am. And so it's also, the book is trying to get people to come back into connection with their sense of self-authority. Like they are in charge and solely in charge of their experience and no one else is.
Yeah, that's great. You know, we really do take life so seriously. I mean, and we're kind of spoon-fed that constantly, you know, every day. And it's it can be sometimes a challenge to shut that out, you know, and to be able to, you know, recognize, you know, that we do have that power, we do have that choice, and, you know, we don't have to live by anyone else's rules or regulations, so to speak. You know,
And so it can be helpful to realize that our loved ones who have gone ahead of us in some way have not left us, but they're waiting and they're planning spectacular parties for us as well. And they want us to be happy. A lot of them realize when they get over there that, oh my gosh, you know, I was really hard on myself, or I was really hard on that person. It's totally unnecessary because we're immortal beings. And that's the other message perhaps in the book, is if the book is broken up into three sections, and one focuses on connecting with the realization of the feeling of our own immortality. And if you can actually plug into that feeling of what it means to be an immortal being and then feel it, everything changes. Suddenly we chill out. We're not afraid anymore. We don't worry because we have an eternity to do whatever we want to do.
Yeah. Every now and then I get a glimpse of, for me personally, I get a glimpse of that, you know, and then it's just like a, you know, in the long run, in the experience of myself, this really doesn't matter, you know, and, then I can feel relieved, you know, that I don't really have get all up in arms about whatever is going on.
Right. And it's that sense of relief, which is one of the most powerful experiences a person can have in a human physical body, because it's a release. And when that release happens, you start rising. Again, that contributes to the word rising. One of the nicest meditations a person can do is just to watch very small children as they move about life. Like, they're fearless. They're curious. So the state that that I'm suggesting that people want to have more of is composed of three things: to be curious, to remain curious, to remain unbiased, and to be unafraid. And a lot of people have a problem with the word unbiased, but I found that if you can allow yourself to be curious and not afraid, out of that arises this very nice unbiased perspective that everything is okay no matter what.
That's great. Well, thank you, August, for your time today. I always enjoy speaking with you, and I'm particularly happy to talk about your book today. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much. This is lots of fun for me.
Great. Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been August Goforth. We've been talking about his new book, The Risen, A Companion to Grief. And again, you can find out more about this and his other books by visiting the website, therisenbooks.com. And again, on there you can also find some previous interviews of his as well as a blog. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.